Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkaran. More importantly, today I get to speak with Dr. Shuman Nott, who is assistant professor in the Department of Anthropology at the Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam Government College in India. We'll be speaking about a brand new Routledge publication called Democracy and Social Cleavage in India, Ethnography of Riots, Everyday Politics, and Communalism in West Bengal. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Raj. Thanks a lot for calling me.
Tell us about the backstory for this book.
Yeah, actually, this is basically a continuation of my earlier book. I was working on West Bengal since 2007. In Bengal politics, I was working on. So in 2011, a historical change has happened in Bengal. It ended the three-decade-long left regime of Bengal, and it started a new regime, which is still continuing under the leadership of Trinamool Congress. So while I was working on the political transformation during 2009, 10, 11, and I also wrote a book on it, which got published from Routledge in 2019. It's called The People Party Policy Interplay in India. So when I was finishing my previous book, certain disturbing incidents were happening in Bengal, something which was not there for the last three decades. And the religious sentiment was coming back, and numerous number of riots were happening at many places of Bengal. So I thought that this riot is now going to determine much of the political fate of the state. And I started visiting the riot-affected areas, started staying there. Initial idea was not to write a book, but to publish certain fact-finding reports. Because, you know, in this part of the country, you really don't have any newspaper reports on riots. Because it's banned that you cannot really circulate the news on riots. Because government fears that if the news of riots spreads, the riot is going to spread much more. So virtually every incident which are actually riots are never reported. So my idea primarily was to report and publish as fact-finding reports. But then eventually I understood that it's important to write something on this historical juncture, because this is basically changing the entire political dynamics of Bengal, which earlier revolved around party. Now it is revolving around the identity. So I thought that I should write a book. So I started writing it and it got published.
What's the central thrust or argument of the book?
Yeah, my argument is to map how riots are manufactured. You know, if you look at the riot literature, most of the literature in India are actually after effects of riots. And some historical studies actually tries to map why riots are happening at certain point of time in history. But there is a shortage of ethnographic works which actually sees riots as it is happening. So my central argument was to find out why riots happen and how riots are manufactured. And in order to do that, I actually theorized the Bengal politics by using Bourdieu's notion of cultural misrecognition. This idea was actually germinated way back in 2009 when I was doing a fieldwork in one of the remote villages of Bankura, where I found that all of a sudden, certain little known cultural things, cultural performances, are getting carnivalous look, carnivalous touch. So I started studying it, why it is happening, what are the forces which are making things happening right now, and what are their aims. So when I was studying it, I also wrote an article which got published in EPW in 2018. So in 2018, I published this idea. And then I thought that this cultural mystery cognition can best explain how cultural apparatuses are actually being used to gain political might. So my fundamental idea or the fundamental argument is to use cultural mystery cognition to understand why riots are happening and how cultural apparatuses are being used to capture popular sentiment along the identity.
So in this context, why are riots happening?
Primarily because to consolidate the sentiments of the Hindus and Muslims in Bengal. You know, there is a clear division right now that the aggressive Hindus, those who really feel that Hindu khatre mein hai, there is this term that Hindus are in danger, which is basically a myth. I wrote about it in the introductory chapter. So this idea is being popularized by RSS and BJP so that they can capture the Hindu sentiment, popular Hindu sentiment, and translate it into popular electoral support. While the Trinamool Congress cannot afford to lose the vote, the support that they get from the Muslims. Because in Bengal, it is roughly about 27% of the Muslim population. So riots are actually instruments to consolidate the electoral support so that BJP can challenge TMC, and that's what they're doing.
Do you want to tell us a bit about the structure of the book?
The book is actually divided into 8 chapters. So I started with an introduction where I wrote about how these popular myths are being created, myths like Muslims will outnumber Hindus in a few decades from now. Myths like Muslims are nasty, or from the Muslims' perspectives, while Hindus, they are preparing for an attack on the minorities. These sort of ideas, how they are germinated and how we can frame. So this is how I started my introduction. In the second chapter is basically the theoretical frame of the book, where I argue that why cultural mystery cognition can be used as a powerful tool to explain the politics, to explain the current politics, not only in Bengal, but also most of the part of the country. From third chapter onwards, these are my empirical findings based on my intensive fieldwork. So in the third chapter, I kind of mapped how Bengal political violence is changing for last one decade or so. So earlier, the political violence were mostly party-based violence. So we had this Maoist problem, the Maoist versus the left in Bengal. And many party cadres were killed. But right now, it's more about identity politics. In the chapter 4, I wrote about Islamic fundamentalism. You know, in Bengal, no one talks about Islamic fundamentalism. How Islamic fundamentalism is growing and how far they have percolated into the society. So that is also based on few case studies from Bengal, where I have shown that how these Sharia forms of rule, which sees Islam as a monolith, is actually replacing more open and syncretic traditions like Sufism in Bengal, and how they are destroying dargahs, how they are displacing people who are actually Sufi followers. So this chapter talks about Islamic fundamentalism. In chapter 5, I talked about how Hindutva and its organization are actually spreading its roots in Bengal and why they are successful in doing that. Because, you know, in Bengal earlier during the left regime, everything was about party. So this left, especially by the Communist Party of India, Marxists, they had a huge and elaborate form of organization everywhere. Now, those organizations are systematically disbanded by the TNC, and they did not create any parallel organization like the left had. So there is a vacuum, and this vacuum is increasingly being filled up by RSS and BJP by using their identity sentiments. So how aggressive Hindutva and its organizational mechanisms are working, and how they are using certain little known traditions like Ram Navami celebration, Ganga Aruti, these were not there. These traditions are actually invented traditions. So how they are using it. And on chapter 6, I wrote about riots. So when these fundamentalist, two fundamental forces meet, what happens then? So I studied riots almost every part of the state. But I wrote about the riots which I have seen on firsthand and the places where I could stay back. So I wrote about riots which are happening in the jute mill areas, in the coal belt areas, and certain social media related riots that are happening almost in a random way. So I wrote about riots, how riots are manufactured, what are the effects of the riots. In chapter 7, I again came back and discussed about how you can use these empirical things and how you can theorize it in the framework of cultural anthropology. And I conclude by arguing that communalism is basically percolating in everyday life of Bengal. And there is virtually no force that can stop it. So this is basically the structure of my book.
So many directions. Which one do I choose? Okay, let's ask a fairly basic question. What is the data? What are you looking at? You know, what does your research consist of for this book?
Yeah, so basically I am looking at the ethnographic data because I stayed in the field for a very long period of time and I have experienced what were happening there. So the primary data of this book is my own ethnographic research, own ethnographic. But apart from this, I have also collected certain documents, certain newspaper reports, and of course, I looked upon the existing literature quite thoroughly. The primary data is definitely the ethnographic one.
Is doing this particular research, whether the actual field work or the publication, is it dangerous to you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. This is absolutely dangerous. You know, I can narrate you certain stories because I got arrested twice while doing this work. And the problem is that I'm also a government employee. So getting arrested can jeopardize my entire career. So I had to request them. I had to talk to them. I mean, it was not a formal arrest. So luckily they didn't issue any record that I got arrested. But, you know, there are 3-4 challenges when you do this kind of work. Because you are always under the scanner of the government. They are not really happy that you're writing about riots. They do not want anybody to know that riots are happening in Bengal. So that is one problem from the administration. The second problem is that there are political cadres who are going to threaten you. Recently, I got published one article in South Asian History and Culture Journal. And immediately after that, I got a phone call. Requesting, that was not a request, that was basically a threat, asking me to stop working on Bengal politics and to start working on something else. So these sort of hazards are almost always. And apart from that, in the field, when you are staying back in a riot prone areas, you are always at risk. So that amount of risk is there.
And so from what I'm gathering, the risk doesn't seem to deter you, otherwise put, unless I'm mistaken, you intend to pursue this line of research, or are you considering perhaps researching something else?
No. See, Raj, the problem is this is not the Bengal that we have grown up. We really have seen something else. You know, during my childhood days when I was in a school, we used to have a platform called Science Bigyan Moncho. Bigyan in Bengali means science platform. So they used to come to our schools. They used to show us how we can go beyond religion, how we can go beyond superstitious beliefs, etc. And now they have disappeared. All these organizations have been dismantled. And instead of becoming a secular state, we are going back towards a more of a communal state. So I'm not really happy. And I have a child who is 3 years old. And I really don't want him to grow in a state like this. And at the same time, I'm not really willing to leave. I want to change it. But I really don't have that much of power that I can change the state. But at least I can write. At least in future, if somebody wants to work, if somebody wants to know what was happening in Bengal, at least they should have some document. So I'm also working with one of the organizations known as Amra Ek Sochetan Prayas. I actually dedicated my book to them. So we will try to stop it, no matter what happens, no matter how much amount of risk it entails. I really don't want my state to, or my country, to ruin like this. At least I'll try.
Do you foresee any sort of shift, solution, development? If you could conjecture, what do you see as the future of the situation?
I'm really not really hopeful about it. Nothing positive is happening. Nowhere. If you go at the grassroots, if you go to any village, be it a Hindu-dominated village or a Muslim-dominated village, you will see things are changing like any. Even the tribal people who were not really into this Muslim thing, they have also made believe that they are Hindu. And Muslims are the sources of all problems. If you go to a Muslim village, you will see that in the evening, they have this Islamic Jalsha, they call it Islamic Jalsha, where somebody will come and chant everything against Hindus. So these sort of things are happening, and there is no one who is going to stop it. There is no political force that are going to stop it. And even the civil society organizations, including ours, are being stopped from documenting. So things are quite bad in Bengal, also in the country at large.
Do you see parallels to the situation elsewhere?
Yeah. I mean, the hatred against Muslims is quite widespread. See, in other countries also, these things are happening. And the mode of governance worldwide is also changing. So now we have a more kind of an unsaid dictatorial government in many places. And they are using similar anti-Islamic or maybe in other places, some other religion, anti-minority sentiments, anti-weaker section sentiments are being used. So this is basically a global development, right? You are right.
I was curious to see if you saw specific parallels in other spaces.
Even in USA, for example. Instead of differences being understood, differences are being promoted. You see in Sri Lanka also, they are now a failed state. But they are also facing the same thing in Bangladesh, our neighboring country. In Bangladesh itself, it is very sad to see that despite of so many positive NGOs and civil society organizations, they are also succumbed to the Islamic fundamentalism, like anything. In the last few years, Hindu religious festivals were being stopped. Their idols were dismantled. So these things are happening almost everywhere.
You mentioned that you wrote this book to document and to communicate what, according to you, is being suppressed by officials. Presuming that is the case, where may folks go then to find out these truths? Are there other sources?
Your voice just cracked. Can you repeat it?
Are there other, you mentioned that officials are suppressing such information, knowledge of such events and realities. So other than your book, are there sources of this suppressed information? Where can folks find out about this?
Yeah, actually, you can search certain civil society organizational reports. For example, our own organization, Amra Ek Sochetan Proyash, it has a website where almost all fact-finding reports are being uploaded. You can go through them and you can see for yourself. And there are certain little magazines in Bengal, but these are all mostly published in Bengali language. So it's very difficult to find sources. But if you kind of search in the newspaper regarding the places where I mentioned, apart from my book, our own organization, the organization with whom I'm working, Amra Ek Sochetan Press, they also have a website. So most of the fact-finding reports are available there. And apart from these organizations, there are certain little magazines. So in Bengal, there is a concept called little magazine. These are small booklets that they publish. But most of the things are in Bangla, in Bengali. So, but one thing you can be sure of that, actually I have provided a list of the riots that has happened in probably in chapter 3. So if you search in the Google along with the names and the dates, you will see that certain reports are there, but they will not mention that it's a riot. They will mention that there were certain conflicts, there were certain clashes, but they will not say that these are riots.
What sorts of scholars or fields might this book most impact, or otherwise put, who might most benefit from reading the book?
Somebody who is interested in identity politics, and somebody who really wants to know how riots actually happens, you know, because I have been there, I have seen the actors, I have seen the perpetrators, and I have talked to them. So how somebody who is really interested to know how riots are manufactured, how riots happen. So basically a scholar from the field of political science, and definitely somebody who's interested in religious fundamentalism, they might find this book.
Is there anything else about the book that you hope we touch on?
No, almost you almost covered everything. But I'll be very happy that if people read this book, because, you know, one thing that I must say, in Bengal is a very interesting case. Because in Bengal, during the partition, when the country was independent, a lot of riots were happening. You can see many important scholars have worked on. But after CPIM-led left-front government resumed the power, almost zero riots were happening. It doesn't mean that the religious fundamentalism was blown away. It was there, but it was rather suppressed or sidelined. And the main area of focus became party. But Bengal will show you how these memories, how the nostalgia actually remains and actually transports from one generation to the next. Bengal is a very interesting case, which shows that despite of a state not being a riot-prone one for more than three decades, can quickly resume to an identity-based riot-prone state. And that too within just 3-4 years. And people started talking about only Hindu and Muslims, nothing else.
Fascinating. Disturbing as well as fascinating.
Basically very disturbing, true.
Thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
Thank you, Raj. Thank you for calling me up. And I'll be very happy that if people read this book.
Excellent. For those of you listening, we have been speaking with Dr. Shumanath about fascinating new publication, Democracy and Social Cleavage in India. Until next time, stay safe, stay sane, and keep listening. You can find out more about my work at rajbalkaran.com or study with me online at courses.rajbalkaran.com. Take care. Bye-bye.